Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
It sounds like a day we should be afraid of, Black Friday. And frankly, it has gotten a little scary. Malls throwing open their doors to the sound of a starter pistol. Throngs of shoppers attacking the aisles in the dead of night. Activists patrolling the stores, urging people to buy nothing. Based on the crowds we saw today, I'd say shoppers didn't listen. They bought everything in sight. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Academy of Family Physicians, personal preventive care for better patient health and reduced costs for business, aafp.org/value, and by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Friday, November 23rd. Thanks for spending some time with us. They called it Black Friday because this was the day when many retailers supposedly climbed into the black for the year. I don't know if that's really true, but stores have made this day so important, they might forget it's not a very good predictor of the holiday season overall. Last year, Thanksgiving weekend was huge, but retailers struggled in December. And despite the long lines we saw today, this could be the slowest holiday season in 5 years. All the more reason to open at midnight, I guess. Rob Snowden is general manager of the Outlets at Hillsborough. The mall is an hour's drive south of Dallas. Rob, what are you calling this day?
Instead of Black Friday, I'm now calling it Red Eye Friday. This is my first time hosting a midnight opening in a shopping center. And I've got to say, not knowing quite what to expect, I think it was very well received.
So people showed up at midnight?
People did show up at midnight because I think they were driven by the heavy discounts we were offering. And these were very serious shoppers who showed up at midnight.
What do you mean by serious?
Well, for instance, last week we had two women come in, two friends, who knew we were going to be opening at midnight. And they took a map of the center and they walked the entire center to check out all the store locations and the discounts offered in each one so they could plan their attack when they arrived last evening.
So they were doing recon.
They were doing recon, and they did show up, and they did attack the center, and I think they went home very happy with what they purchased. And if they were happy, we were happy.
Yeah, I don't know quite what to say about that. Why did you feel it necessary, Rob, to open at midnight?
Well, these midnight openings really were pioneered by the outlet segment of the shopping center industry about 4 or 5 years ago. And each year they've tended to grow a little more to the fact that I think this year, I doubt there were less than a handful of outlet centers that did not open at midnight, purely based on the success of the past several years. I think the economics of the holiday season have tended to differ a little bit from year to year. So it's really just something that has built up and not necessarily reflective of what's happening in the country this particular holiday season.
Is there any part of you, Rob, that wants to fight this, wants to resist the temptation to open earlier and earlier?
No, not really, because it's amazing. People really come to this midnight opening with a sense of fun, because rarely does anyone come shopping at these events alone. They're usually in family groups or groups of friends, and they have as much of a social event together shopping for these bargains as anything else.
So you see this all as a good thing?
I see it as a very good thing. It's a win-win-win for all of us, and I think it's only going to get bigger and better in succeeding years.
All right, Rob, is it time for you to get some sleep now?
Oh, no, no, no. I've still got another full day ahead of me. I'll try to get some sleep maybe tonight.
Rob Snowden, the general manager of the outlets at Hillsboro, south of Dallas. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Scott.
Investors did some shopping on Wall Street today. We'll talk to a stockbroker down there in Dallas when we do the numbers. About a year ago, Google and Yahoo both took a lot of heat for the way they were doing business in China. Google backed down from the Chinese government and launched a censored version of its search engine. Yahoo handed over the names of people who said unflattering things about the Chinese government. There's no doubt the rules are different in China, but the business opportunity is huge. Today we found out another big name wants to go in, Ask.com. The question is, will this company take on the Chinese? Alisa Roth reports.
CEO Barry Diller says there'll probably be a Chinese version of Ask.com within the next 2 years. And in any case, he's planning to invest another $100 million in a new internet business there. The business of internet searching in China is a tricky one, and that's not even taking information control issues into account. Foreign search engines like Google and Yahoo have had a hard time gaining traction in China. Donald Strassheim is with Roth Capital Partners. He says homegrown companies like Baidu.com have been leaving the foreigners in the dust.
Quite frankly, I'm not sure that it is going to be worthwhile. Baidu is a dominant player over there. They're going to continue to be a dominant player over there. I don't know whether Ask.com has a real opportunity there, but Barry Diller surely does, and so let him go have at it.
But what about the controversial question of internet censorship? Ask.com CEO Diller says he plans to play by the rules in China. Strassheim says that's smart.
China's a sovereign nation. They've got their own rules, the way they do business. And foreign companies can either play by their rules or not be involved.
But China is one of the world's biggest and fastest growing markets for consumers and internet users. Not being involved there may not be a real option. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
The U.S. government said this week that applications for citizenship have doubled this year. That's not going to help the backlog. New fees were supposed to reduce the wait, but it's still more than a year long. At the same time, the INS has launched new measures to speed up the immigration process for Cubans. From our America's desk at WLRN, Dan Gretsch reports.
Anyone who's recently filed to become an American citizen can expect to wait at least 16 months. In July, the federal agency responsible for immigration hiked the naturalization fee from $330 to $595. The plan was to hire more staff to cut the backlog of requests. The opposite happened, as tens of thousands of would-be Americans rushed to beat the deadline. Cheryl Little runs the Florida Immigrant Advocacy Center in Miami.
Immigration officials never seem to have enough staff or resources to do the job, and it's particularly troubling these days because of the increased fees.
This week, immigration officials announced a new measure. Cubans with family in the U.S. will be allowed to travel here without a visa while they wait for their green card. Little says no other immigrant group can do that.
I'm sure that Haitians and other groups would welcome similar policies.
Ninoska Perez is director of the Cuban Liberty Council. She says Cubans should be treated differently.
Other countries have immigrations because they want a better job or they want a better life. Cubans leave the island because they're looking for freedom. Their relatives pay thousands of dollars for people to get them in on speedboats into the United States. It is a very dangerous journey.
The journey through the immigration process won't be getting any shorter. In the 2007 fiscal year, 1.4 million people applied for naturalization. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
We all know the appeal of stores like Costco. Cereal boxes the size of small buildings. Gigantic crates of toilet paper. Buying in bulk. But what if buying in bulk meant you teamed up with other shoppers to get things at a discount? There are some internet startups trying to get that idea off the ground. From our entrepreneurship desk, Andrea Gardner reports.
I need some shampoo. My favorite brand is Bliss. It's not sold in the drugstores, and I'm looking for a deal. I could browse any website that sells products at a discount, but I just heard about one called eSwarm. It lets me post a message online where I describe the product I want and name my price, which is less than retail. A week later, six people have joined me. eSwarm finds us a seller, takes a small commission, and a few weeks later, I get my Bliss. Now, this might seem like a complicated way to shop, but for a whole new generation of consumers, the internet is second nature, and online shopping is easy and entertaining. Through team buying sites like this, consumers can bargain companies down instead of just accepting prices that are offered. Team buying isn't widespread yet. It relies on the power of numbers, but most people have yet to discover it. And while it can be fun to swarm and haggle, it takes time for a supplier to bite. Sometimes they never do. Forrester research analyst Sucharita Mulpuru says that's because consumers can browse for products on many other sites.
The web already provides a pretty easy way for you to find the best price and the best item that you're looking for. And that's the challenge, is you can't just go and do any old product.
Sites tried to promote the team buying approach in the 90s, but they folded quickly. Mulpuru says back then, consumers were wary about buying online, and personal emails were pretty much the only way to spread the word. Not anymore.
With tools like MySpace, Facebook, where you can literally have, you know, thousands of people in your network, you just have much greater reach within people who have similar tastes, who are often of similar demographics, and maybe very likely to buy the same things that you're interested in buying.
And that's why a new crop of young entrepreneurs is giving it a second go. Investors are pumping millions of dollars into these companies. Since eSwarm's launch in July, consumers have swarmed for everything from ski tickets to golf balls to ammunition, says company co-founder John Tempty.
There have been some very random things that have gone through successfully on our website, and we kind of look at each other and we're like, we never thought we'd be in the business of conducting a transaction like that, but if people want it, we'll do it.
Most swarmers are college students, he says. Some of them have told eSwarm that they want a bargain for more than just consumer products. They want to band together to challenge banks and credit card companies to offer them lower interest rates and debt refinancing packages. eSwarm says that plan is just around the corner. In Los Angeles, I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
Well, it was a short but productive day on Wall Street, just a half a day of trading. And it's time to check the week on Wall Street with David Johnson, the stockbroker down in Dallas. Hi, David.
Hello, Scott.
How are you?
I'm doing well, and I can't tell you how happy I am to be here. I was going to blow off this day. I said, you know, that Greenberg smoked turkey sandwich and a little peach chutney on the side and maybe some football, but no, I would have missed this.
Well, investors had the day off yesterday, just a half a day today. Why even bother coming back?
Ostensibly, it's because you can't have a market closed for four consecutive days. And so they have this little excuse me session. But the other side is to give the market a chance to redeem itself. And I'm here to tell you, Scott, we've decided to market this thing. And if you came early this morning, we had doorbuster specials. We had markdown prices.
On stocks.
On stocks. You could buy Freddie Mac for 40 cents on the dollar, and E-Trade was 80% off. And as a bonus, as a little kiss on the cheek, we'd taken a fifth the price off of J.P. Morgan. You could just bargain hunt all day long. I hope you're going to give all of your in-laws stocks for the holidays.
Well, thanks for the suggestion. Well, the reason for that probably is the earlier this week, a big sell-off. The mood was just sour Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, I know. I was here. And it got worse every day. Monday, it was Goldman Sachs coming out and saying, oh, you haven't seen the worst yet. And then on Tuesday, they took two sacred cows out and they shot them, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. It was a slaughter.
It was ugly.
Yeah, it really was. And then, you know, nobody wanted to own these stocks on Wednesday. So here's what we're left with today, I think, We had a short covering rally. My fear is that they were buying stocks back today just in case some good news came out over the weekend, and they're going to turn around and short them again on Monday. But I'm telling you, that enigmatic speech from your close friend, Alan Greenspan, I think it gave us a lift today.
Well, the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac thing was obviously, again, about the subprime issue. And today we had words from Alan Greenspan about the housing market. Pretty interesting what he said today.
Yeah, I mean, it was another one of those speeches that you could probably read any way you wanted to. But the way we read it was the subprime mortgage market's over with, and it went to zero, and it can't go any further. And that's sort of the attitude here on Wall Street is, look, just stop beating them up, okay? You've adjusted. You've discounted it. Now go look at the other stuff. Go look at the other John Deere's that are making great earnings, you know, exporting products and selling them every place else. And look at the deep discounts you can have here. I don't know. We'll see. I hope the buyers stay around for Monday because it was sure nice having him here today.
Yeah. Well, Greenspan also did say, though, that the housing market prices probably haven't bottomed out yet, so we might want to watch out for that. All right, David Johnson, thanks for joining us.
Scott, it's good to be with you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Coming up, we'll talk to the big guy. You know the one I mean. But first, let's do the numbers. In the end, the Dow gained 181 points, about 1.5%. It closed at 12,980. The NASDAQ put on 34, 1.3% to 2,596. The S&P 500 added 23 points. That's 1.2% to close at 1,440. For the week, the Dow dropped 1.5%. NASDAQ about the same. The S&P 500 lost a little bit less than that. The big gainers today were, of course, retailers. Target shares climbed more than 5.5%. Walmart was up almost 2%. JCPenney about 3%. The banks made out nicely as well. Citigroup and J.P. Morgan Chase added 3%. Bank of America, 2.5%. But E-Trade had the biggest day of all. Its shares were up 25% on rumors about a possible merger. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing money since 1937 with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Monday. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas join Arab leaders at the Middle East Peace Summit in Washington. Retailers are rolling up big discounts online for the so-called Cyber Monday. And on November 26, 1942, the film Casablanca had its world premiere in New York City. They played it again and again and again. I'm Caitlin Carroll.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Scott Jagow, in for Kai Rizdahl. As soon as I get off the air, I'm heading straight for the refrigerator. There's a nice plate of turkey in there waiting to become a sandwich. I think there might be some tofurkey, too, for the vegetarians. Anyway, Americans ate about 46 million turkeys yesterday. And this year, more than ever, people were asking about being green for Thanksgiving. One of the options was to buy organic turkeys. Birds raised on natural feed and no antibiotics. But commentator Kelly Alexander isn't sure those turkeys are all that friendly to the environment.
The epitome of recycling has always been the day after Thanksgiving sandwich, when an entire feast is compressed between two slices of bread. Use butternut squash soup as a condiment, add a layer of Brussels sprouts. You get the idea. This year, though, I'm factoring in the latest crusade of the responsible, the carbon footprint. I encourage everyone who eats to think beyond the shrink wrap and eat local. But in so doing, I made a startling discovery. With annual sales totaling more than $1.5 billion, Butterball is by far the best-selling turkey in this country. Yet these turkeys are hatched in an incubator, and then they gorge on a highly fortified corn-based mash while confined in a heated room that is lit 24 hours a day. In the past 10 years, though, there's been a movement away from industrialized birds toward pasture breeds that have been revived by dedicated farmers. These are heritage turkeys. They are expensive and often hard to find. I called my Whole Foods to see if I could get one. I was told yes, but that the bird would come from Central California, 2,662 miles from my home in North Carolina. I then called the Butterball Turkey Hotline. It turns out that Butterball is owned by a company called Carolina Turkeys, whose headquarters are in El Paso, Texas. Carolina Turkeys has 6 plants in the South and Midwest. I was told that a fresh Butterball would come from Mount Olive, North Carolina, 92.3 miles from my door. So a heritage turkey has almost 29 times the environmental impact as an industrially produced one. At a time when half of America has gotten into a car or onto a plane to visit the other half, when our collective carbon footprint is deep enough to throw the earth off its axis, are you doing better to go local and buy Butterball? For me, the answer lies in the day after sandwich. Ask yourself just how good you want it to taste.
Kelly Alexander is a food writer and editor based in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Baseball uses a farm system to develop players. Players go through single A, double A, triple A on their way up to the major leagues, if they're good. Now, why doesn't business do that? Well, it turns out that some people are trying it. In central Louisiana, they've created a farm system for entrepreneurs. We asked Kate Archer Kent to check it out, and she found a rookie business owner who's pitching some hot tamales.
Irma Rodriguez's tamales are a big hit in Forest Hill, Louisiana. Laborers in the town's plant nurseries often call in orders for 80 dozen at a time. The tamales are so popular that Rodriguez is planning to sell them wholesale to supermarkets. She claims she's perfected what she calls heaven in a husk, but she admits she's a rookie at running a business.
I can do manual work, but when it comes to, you know, computer and stuff like that, I'm just like not there at all.
Rodriguez is one of 41 entrepreneurs in Central Louisiana's Entrepreneurial League System, or ELS. Business owners are separated into teams based on their business sense and growth potential. The teams are structured like the minor league baseball system, starting with new blood, the rookie league.
Almost without fail, the rookies, we concentrate mostly on financial management from the get-go.
Keith Rabelais is general manager of the Central Louisiana League. In just over a year, he's built up 2 teams of rookies, a single A and double A division. While the rookies make sense of their profit and loss statements, the single A entrepreneurs size up their competition and learn marketing skills. He says the double A team might grapple with regional expansion.
As a person, their skill level increases, and it's kind of a call from the GM and the coach that we think this person is ready for the next level.
The entrepreneurs try out through a series of interviews. Rabelais says they don't pay a dime for the coaching. The local Rapides Foundation funds the league.
If 8 out of 10 businesses fail in 3 years, if we just keep one from failing in that 3-year period, we've done a pretty remarkable thing. And it goes to the health of a community.
Irma Rodriguez meets weekly with Coach Gary Perkins.
I call him for anything, then it goes wrong in here. And he'll give me an answer for everything.
Perkins draws on 30 years of running successful restaurants. He coaches 12 rookies who run a variety of businesses, from electrical contracting to floristry.
The most successful system in the world is the minor league baseball system. So you take a great template and you can apply that to other things.
Peer-to-peer business coaching is hardly new. Mark Weaver is an entrepreneurship professor at Louisiana State University. He thinks the Entrepreneurial League system is an innovative twist on the model, but he's concerned that business school fundamentals may get short shrift.
My biggest problem with models that rely on just the mentoring and coaching types, they get the nuts and bolts but don't know the underlying reason.
How are you?
Don't get that on the road.
Irma Rodriguez and Gary Perkins have been slugging it out together for 18 months. Now, Rodriguez says she's almost ready to launch her wholesale business.
I was kind of hoping for to have some kind of help from somewhere, and I feel like this was the hand of God helping me, you know?
She's got mixed feelings about being called up to the single-A team. Part of her wants to stay a rookie so she won't have to part ways with her beloved business coach. I'm Kate Archer-Kent for Marketplace.
It's easy to be cynical about this time of year, when people are knocking each other down to grab the last Nintendo Wii on the shelf. But if you look closely enough, you still might catch a glimpse of the sweetness in the holidays. Maybe on Santa's lap.
Look over right at the camera and smile. Cheese.
This is Santa Claus, and I've been doing this now for 15 years, but of course, for much longer than that.
Okay, so the real Santa was too busy to talk to Marketplace. We found one of his stand-ins, and he explained how it works.
Well, I'm an independent contractor. I'm hired between the mall and the photo company, basically, is what it is. Yes, it's pretty lucrative. Let's say it's over 10. I think the Santa at Macy's in New York, I think he makes like 35 for the season.
Smile. Smile.
The Santas that work in the malls under contract, they are required usually to have a natural beard. A lot of times adults will walk by and go, is that real? And I have to say, oh yes, it's real. And also I have to make sure that the little baby's hands stay down because they'll just reach up and grab a handful of it.
Take a seat with Santa, come on.
Alejandra, hey.
Right here,
smile.
Our marketplace world has gotten to the point where little kids are asking for iPhones and Xbox 300s and things like that, to where obviously I always would tell them, well, I don't know. I'll have to talk to your mom and dad about that. Come on up here. And what do you want Santa to bring for Christmas?
I want Star Wars stuff.
It's pretty cliche, but what I do is I wait till the kids ask me to do ho, 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 and then I'll do that. Well, they'll say, ho, ho, ho. I go, ho, 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 ho.
That's the Santa at Glendale Galleria Mall near Los Angeles. We don't know how many stand-ins Santa actually employs, but there are more than 48,000 malls and shopping centers in America, so he's got a pretty big workforce, I'm betting.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of a well-diversified college savings plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note, I was pretty skeptical when Amazon rolled out its new e-book reader this week. The Kindle, it's called. But lo and behold, Amazon has already sold out of them. Now, they could have sold two of them for all we know. Amazon's not saying how many. But certainly, the $400 Kindle is more popular than a lot of people expected. The device holds 200 books and weighs just 10 ounces. I don't know, I'm still on the fence. Nothing quite like a ratty paperback. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 181 points, just over 1.5%. The NASDAQ added 34 points, about 1.3%. And the S&P 500 scooped up 23 points, 1.75%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is J.J. Yore. Next time on the program, startups strike a balance between values and profits.
It's important to me to make sure that people understand what we're trying to do, that I'm not just some lady that runs around with bumper stickers on her car.
I'm Scott Jagow. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.